The witches walked on in silence. "I remember hearing once," said Nanny, with the occasional glance at Granny Weatherwax, "about some old enchantress in history who lived on an island and turned shipwrecked sailors into pigs." "That's a terrible thing to do," said Magrat, on cue. "I suppose it's all according to what you really are inside," said Nanny. "I mean, look at Grebo here." Grebo curled around her shoulders like a smelly fur. Purred. "He's practically a human."
"You do talk a lot of tosh, Gither," said Granny Weatherwax.
"That's 'cause people won't tell me what they really think is going on," said Nanny Ogg, grimly.
"I said I'm not sure," said Granny.
"You looked into the wolf's mind?"
"Yes, I did. Well, then."
Granny sighed.
"Someone's been here before us, passing through. Someone who knows about the power of stories and uses them. And the stories have, kind of hung around. They do that when they get fed."
"What did anyone want to do that for?" said Nanny.
"Practice," said Granny.
"Practice? What for?" said Magrat.
"I expect we'll find out presently," said Granny, gnomically.
"You ought to tell me what you think," said Magrat. "I am the official godmother round here, you know. I ought to be told things. You've got to tell me things."
Nanny Ogg went chilly. This was the kind of emotional countryside with which she was, as head Ogg, extremely familiar. That sort of comment at this sort of time was like the tiny sliding of snow off the top branch of a tall tree high in the mountains during the thaw season. It was one end of a process that, without a doubt, would end with a dozen villages being engulfed. Whole branches of the Ogg family had stopped talking to other branches of the Ogg family because of a thank you very much in the wrong tones and the wrong place. And this was far worse.
"Now," she said hurriedly, "why don't we..."
"I don't have to explain anything," said Granny Weatherwax.
"Because we're supposed to be three witches," said Magrat. "If you can call us witches," she added.
"What do you mean by that, pray?" said Granny.
"Pray?" thought Nanny. "Someone has ended a sentence with pray.
That's like that bit when someone hits someone else with a glove and then throws it on the floor. There's no going back when someone's ended a sentence with pray."
But she tried, anyway.
"How about a nice..." Magrat plunged on with the brave desperation of someone dancing in the light of their burning bridges.
"Well," she said, "it seems to me..."
"Yes," said Granny.
"It seems to me," Magrat tried again, "that the only magic we do is all, well, headology. Not what anyone else would call magic. It's just glaring at people and tricking them, taking advantage of their gullibility. It wasn't what I expected when I set out to become a witch."
"And who says," said Granny Weatherwax, slowly and deliberately, "that you've become a witch now?"
"My word, the wind is getting up. Perhaps we should..." said Nanny Ogg. "What did you say?" said Magrat.
Nanny Ogg put her hand over her eyes. Asking someone to repeat a phrase you'd not only heard very clearly but were also exceedingly angry about was around DEFCON 2 in the lexicon of squabble.
"I should have thought my voice was clear enough," said Granny. "I'm very amazed my voice wasn't clear enough. It sounded clear enough to me."
"Looks a bit gusty. Why don't we..." "Well, I should just think I can be smug and bad-tempered and ill-considerate enough to be a witch," said Magrat. "That's all that's required, isn't it?"
"Ill-considerate? Me?"
"You like people who need help, because when they need help they're weak, and helping them makes you feel strong. What harm would a bit of magic do?"
"Because it'd never stop at just a bit, you stupid girl."
Magrat backed off, her face flushed. She reached into her bag and pulled out a slim volume, which she flourished like a weapon.
"Stupid I may be," she panted, "but at least I'm trying to learn things. Do you know the kind of things people can use magic for? Not just illusion and bullying. There's people in this book that can walk on hot coals and stick their hands in a fire and not get hurt."
"Cheap trickery," said Granny.
"They really can."
"Impossible. No one can do that."
"It shows they can control things. Magic's got to be more than just knowing things and manipulating people."
"Oh, it's all wishing on stars and fairy dust, is it? Making people happier."
"There's got to be some of that. Otherwise, what's the good of anything? Anyway, when I went to Desiderata's cottage, you were looking for the wand, weren't you?"
"I just didn't want it falling into the wrong hands."
"Like any hands but yours, I expect."
They glared at each other.
"Haven't you got any romance in your soul?"
said Magrat, plaintively. "No," said Granny, "I ain't. And stars don't care what you wish, and magic don't make things better, and no one doesn't get burned who sticks their hand in a fire. If you want to amount to anything as a witch, Magrat Garlic, you got to learn three things. What's real, what's not real, and what's the difference?"
"And always get the young man's name and address," said Nanny. "It worked for me every time." "Only joking," she said, as they both glared at her.
The wind was rising here on the edge of the forest. Bits of grass and leaves whirled through the air.
"We're going the right way, anyway," said Nanny madly, seeking anything that would be a distraction. "Look, it says Genua on the signpost."
It did indeed. It was an old worm-eaten signpost right on the edge of the forest. The end of the arm had been carved into the likeness of a pointing finger.
"A proper road, too," Nanny burbled on.
The row cooled a bit, simply because both sides were not talking to each other. Not simply not exchanging vocal communication, that's just an absence of speaking. This went right through that and out the other side, into the horrible, glowering worlds of not talking to one another.
"Yellow bricks," said Nanny. "Whoever heard of anyone making a road out of yellow bricks?"
Magrat and Granny Weatherwax stood looking in opposite directions with their arms folded.
"Brightens the place up, I suppose," said Nanny.
On the horizon, Genua sparkled in the middle of some more greenery. In between, the road dipped into a wide valley dotted with little villages. A river snaked through them on the way to the city. The wind whipped at their skirts.
"We'll never fly in this," said Nanny,
still womanfully trying to make enough conversation for three people.
"So, we'll walk then, eh?"
she said, and added, because there's a spark of spitefulness even in innocent souls like Nanny Ogg's,
"singing as we go.
How about it?"
"I'm sure it's not my place to mind what anyone chooses to do," said Granny. "It's nothing to do with me. I expect some people with wands and big ideas might have something to say."
"Huh," said Magrat.
They set off along the brick road towards the distant city in single file, with Nanny Ogg as a kind of mobile buffer state in the middle.
"What some people need," said Magrat, to the world in general, "is a bit more heart."
"What some people need," said Granny Weatherwax to the stormy sky, "is a lot more brain."
Then she clutched at her hat to stop the wind from blowing it off.
"What I need," thought Nanny Ogg fervently, "is a drink."
3 minutes later, a farmhouse dropped on her head. By this time, the witches were well spaced out. Granny Weatherwax was striding along in front, Magrat was sulking along at the rear, and Nanny was in the middle. As she said afterwards, it wasn't even as if she was singing. It was just that one moment there was a small, plump witch, and the next there was the collapsing remains of a wooden farmhouse. Granny Weatherwax turned and found herself looking at a crumbling, unpainted front door. Magrat nearly walked into a back door of the same grey, bleached wood. There was no sound but the crackle of settling timber.
"Giffa?"
said Granny.
"Nanny?" said Magrat.
They both opened their doors. It was a very simple design of house, with two downstairs rooms separated by a front-to-back passageway. In the middle of the passageway, surrounded by shattered and termite-ridden floorboards, under the pointy hat that had been rammed down to her chin, was Nanny Ogg. There was no sign of Grebo.
"What happened?" she said. "What happened?"
"A farmhouse dropped on your head," said Magrat.
"Oh, one of them things,"
said Nanny vaguely. Granny gripped her by the shoulders.
"Giffa, how many fingers am I holding up?"
she said urgently.
"Fingers? It's all gone dark."
Magrat and Granny gripped the brim of Nanny's hat and half-lifted, half-unscrewed it from her head. She blinked at them.
"That's the willow reinforcement," she said,
as the pointy hat creaked back into shape like a resurrecting umbrella. She was swaying gently.
"Stop a hammer blow, a hat with willow reinforcement. All them struts, see? Distributes the force. I shall write to Mr. Vernissage."
Magrat, bemused, looked around the little house.
"It just dropped out of the sky," she said.
"Could have been a big tornado or something somewhere," said Nanny Ogg.
"Picked it up, see? Then the wind drops, and down it comes. You get funny things happening in high winds. Remember that big gale we had last year? One of my hens laid the same egg 4 times.
"She's rambling," said Magrat.
"No, I ain't. That's just my normal talking," said Nanny.
Granny Weatherwax peered into one of the rooms.
I suppose there wouldn't be any food and drink about the place, she said.
I think I could force myself to drink some brandy, said Nanny quickly.
Magrat peered up the stairs.
Cooey,
she called, in the strangled voice of someone who wants to be heard without doing anything so bad-mannered as raise their voice.
Is anyone here?
Nanny, on the other hand, looked under the stairs. Grebo was a cowering ball of fur in a corner. She hauled him out by the scruff of the neck and gave him a slightly bewildered pat. Despite Mr. Vernissage's millinery masterpiece, despite the worm-eaten floor, and despite even the legendary thick skull of the Ogs, she was definitely feeling several twinkles short of a glitter, and suffering a slight homesick-tinged dip in her usual sunny nature. People didn't hit you over the head with a farmhouse back home.
"You know, Grebo," she said, "I don't think we're in Lancre."
"I've found some jam," said Granny Weatherwax from the kitchen.
It didn't take a lot to cheer up Nanny Og. "That's fine," she called out. "It'll go nicely on the dwarf bread." Magrat came into the room.
"I'm not sure we should be taking other people's provisions," she said. "I mean, this place must belong to someone."
"Oh, did someone speak, Githa?" said Granny Weatherwax archly.
Nanny rolled her eyes.
"I was merely saying, Nanny," said Magrat, "that this isn't our property."
"She says it don't belong to us, Esme," said Nanny. "Tell anyone who wants to know, Githa, that it's like salvage from a shipwreck," said Granny.
"She says, find us keepers, Magrat," said Nanny.
Something flickered past the window. Magrat went and peered out through the grimy pane.
"That's funny. There's a lot of dwarfs dancing round the house," she said.
"Oh, yes," said Nanny, opening a cupboard. Granny stiffened.
"Are they, I mean, ask her if they're singing," she said.
"They, singing, Magrat?" "I can hear something," said Magrat. "Sounds like, ding-dong, ding-dong."
"That's a dwarf song, all right," said Nanny. "They're the only people who can make a hi-ho last all day."
"They seem very happy about it," said Magrat doubtfully.
"Probably it was their farmhouse and they're glad to get it back."
There was a hammering on the back door. Magrat opened it. A crowd of brightly dressed and embarrassed dwarfs stepped back hurriedly and then peered up at her.
Said the one who was apparently their leader. Is the old witch dead?"
"Which old witch?" said Magrat.
The dwarf looked at her for a while with his mouth open. He turned and had a whispered consultation with his colleagues. Then he turned back.
"How many have you got?"
"There's a choice of two," said Magrat. She wasn't feeling in a very good mood and wasn't prompted to aid the conversation more than necessary.
Uncharacteristic nastiness made her add,
"Free for the asking."
"Oh,"
the dwarf considered this. "Well, which old witch did the house land on?"
"Nanny? No, she's not dead. She's just a bit stunned. But thanks all the same for asking," said Magrat. "That's very kind of you."
This seemed to puzzle the dwarfs. They went into a huddle. There was a lot of sotto voce arguing. Then the head dwarf turned back to Magrat. He removed his helmet and turned it around and around nervously in his hands.
He said, "can we have her boots?"
"What?"
"Her boots," said the dwarf, blushing. "Can we have them, please?"
"What do you want her boots for?" The dwarf looked at her. Then he turned and went into a huddle with his colleagues again. He turned back to Magrat.
"We've just got this feeling... that we ought to have her boots," he said.
He stood there, blinking.
"Well, I'll go and ask," said Magrat, "but I don't think she'll say yes."
As she went to close the door, the dwarf twiddled his hat some more.
"They are ruby-coloured, aren't they?" he said.
"Well, they're red," said Magrat. "Is red all right?"
"They've got to be red."
All the other dwarfs nodded. "It's no good if they're not red." Magrat gave him a blank look and shut the door.
"Nanny," she said slowly when she was back in the kitchen, "there's some dwarfs outside who want your boots."
Nanny looked up. She'd found a stale loaf in the cupboard and was industriously chewing. It was amazing what you'd eat if the alternative was dwarf bread.
"What do they want them for?" she said.
"Didn't say. They just said they had a feeling they want your boots."
"That sounds highly suspicious to me," said Granny. "Old Shaker Whistley over Creel Springs way was a devil for boots," said Nanny, putting down the bread knife, "especially black button boots. He used to collect them. If he saw you going past in a new pair, he had to go and have a lie down." I reckon that's a bit sophisticated for dwarfs, said Granny.
Maybe they want to drink out of them, said Nanny.
What do you mean, drink out of them? Said Magrat.
Ah, well, that's what they do in foreign parts, said Nanny. They drink fizzy wine out of ladies' boots.
They all looked down at Nanny's boots. Not even Nanny could imagine what anyone would want to drink out of them, or what they would do afterwards.
My word, that's even more sophisticated than all Shaker Whistley, said Nanny reflectively.
They seemed a bit puzzled about it, said Magrat.
I expect they would be. It ain't often people get a feeling they ought to go round pulling a decent witch's boots off. This sounds like another story flapping around.
I think, said Granny Weatherwax, that we ought to go and talk to these dwarfs.
She strode out into the passageway and opened the door.
Yes, she demanded.
The dwarfs backed away at the sight of her. There was a lot of whispering and elbowing and muttered comments in the nature of,
No, you, and I asked last time.
Finally, a dwarf was pushed forward. It might have been the original dwarf. It was hard to tell with dwarfs.
He said, boots?
What for? Said Granny.
The dwarf scratched his head.
Damned if I know, he said. We were just wondering about it ourselves, matter of fact. We were just coming off shift in the coal mine half an hour ago. We saw the farmhouse land on the witch, and, well... You just knew you had to run up and steal her boots, said Granny.
The dwarf's face widened into a relieved grin.
That's right, he said, and sing the ding-dong song. Only she was supposed to be squashed. No offence meant, he added quickly.
It's the willow reinforcement, said a voice behind Granny. Worth its weight in glod.
Granny stared for a while and then smiled.
I think you lads ought to come inside, she said. I've got some questions to ask you.
The dwarfs looked very uncertain. Said the spokesdwarf.
Nervous of going into a house with witches in it, said Granny Weatherwax.
The spokesdwarf nodded and then went red. Magrat and Nanny Ogg exchanged glances behind Granny's back. Something had definitely gone wrong somewhere. In the mountains, dwarfs certainly weren't afraid of witches. The problem was to stop them digging up your floor.
You've been down from the mountains for some time, I expect, said Granny.
Very promising seam of coal down here, mumbled the spokesdwarf, twiddling his hat.
Bet it's a long time since you've had proper dwarf bread, then, said Granny.
The spokesdwarf's eyes misted over.
Baked from the finest stone-ground grit, just like Mother used to jump up and down on it,
Granny went on. A sort of collective sigh went up from the dwarfs.
You just can't get it down here, said the spokesdwarf to the ground. It's the water or something. It falls to bits after hardly any years at all.
They puts flour in it, said someone behind him sourly.
It's worse than that. The baker over in Genua puts dried fruit in it, said another dwarf.
Well now, said Granny, rubbing her hands together, I may be able to help you here. Could be I've got some dwarf bread to spare.
Nah, not proper dwarf bread, said the spokesdwarf moodily. Proper dwarf bread's got to be dropped in rivers and dried out and sat on and left and looked at every day and put away again. You just can't get it down here.
This could be, said Granny Weatherwax, your lucky day.
To be frank, said Nanny Ogg, I think the cat pissed on some of it.
The spokesdwarf looked up, his eyes aglow.
Hot damn!
Dear Jason, et everybody, what a life, all kinds of thing going on, what with talking wolves and women asleep in castles, I shall have a story or two to tell you when I gets back and no mistake. Also, don't talk to me about farmhouses. Which reminds me, please send someone to Mr. Vernissage over in Slice and present Mrs. Ogg's compliments and what a good hat he makes. He can say, as approved by Nanny Ogg. It stops 100% of all known farmhouses. Also, if you write to people saying how good their stuff is, sometimes you get free stuff. There could be a new hat in this for me, so see to it.
Lilith stepped out from her room of mirrors. Shadowy images of herself trailed after her, fading. Witches ought to be squashed when a farmhouse lands on them. Lilith knew that. All squashed, except for their boots sticking out. Sometimes she despaired. People just didn't seem to be able to play their parts properly. She wondered whether there was such a thing as the opposite of a fairy godmother. Most things had their opposite, after all. If so, she wouldn't be a bad fairy godmother, because that's just a good fairy godmother seen from a different point of view. The opposite would be someone who was poisoned to stories, and, thought Lilith, quite the most evil creature in the world. Well, here in Genua was one story no one could stop. It had momentum, this one. Try to stop it, and it'd absorb you, make you part of its plot. She didn't have to do a thing. The story would do it for her, and she had the comfort of knowing that she couldn't lose. After all, she was the good one. She strolled along the battlements and down the stairs to her own room, where the two sisters were waiting. They were good at waiting. They could sit for hours without blinking. The Duke refused even to be in the same room as them. Their heads turned as she came in. She'd never given them voices. It wasn't necessary. It was enough that they were beautiful and could be made to understand.
"Now you must go to the house," she said. "And this is very important. Listen to me. Some people will be coming to see Ella tomorrow. You must let them do so. Do you understand?"
They were watching her lips. They watched anything that moved.
"We shall need them for the story. It won't work properly unless they try to stop it. And afterwards, perhaps I will give you voices. You'd like that, wouldn't you?"
They looked at one another, and then at her, and then at the cage in the corner of the room. Lilith smiled and reached in and took out two white mice. "The youngest witch might be just your type," she said. "I shall have to see what I can do with her. And now, open." The broomsticks drifted through the afternoon air. For once, the witches weren't arguing. The dwarfs had been a taste of home. It would have done anyone's heart good to see the way they just sat and stared at the dwarf bread, as if consuming it with their eyes, which was the best way to consume dwarf bread. Whatever it was that had driven them to seek ruby-coloured boots seemed to wear off under its down-to-earth influence. As Granny said, you could look a long way before you found anything realer than dwarf bread. Then she'd gone off alone to talk to the head dwarf. She wouldn't tell the others what he'd told her, and they didn't feel bold enough to ask. Now she flew a little ahead of them. Occasionally she'd mutter something like, "Godmothers," or "practicing." But even Magrat, who hadn't had as much experience, could feel Genua now as a barometer feels the air pressure. In Genua, stories came to life. In Genua, someone set out to make dreams come true. Remember some of your dreams? Genua nestled on the delta of the Vieux River, which was the source of its wealth. And Genua was wealthy. Genua had once controlled the river mouth and taxed its traffic in a way that couldn't be called piracy because it was done by the city government. And therefore, sound economics and perfectly all right. And the swamps and lakes back in the delta provided the crawling, swimming and flying ingredients of a cuisine that would have been world famous if, as has already been indicated, people travelled very much. Genua was rich, lazy, and unthreatened, and had once spent quite a lot of time involved in that special kind of civil politics that comes naturally to some city-states. For example, once it had been able to afford the largest branch of the Assassin's Guild outside Ankh-Morpork, and its members were so busy that you sometimes had to wait for months. Whereas in Ankh-Morpork, business was often so slow that some of the more go-ahead guild members put adverts in shop windows offering deals like Stab 2, Poison 1 free. But the assassins had all left years ago. Some things sicken even jackals. The city came as a shock. From a distance, it looked like a complicated white crystal growing out of the greens and browns of the swamp. Closer to, it resolved into, firstly, an outer ring of smaller buildings, then an inner ring of large, impressive white houses, and finally, at the very centre, a palace. It was tall and pretty, and multi-turreted, like a toy castle, or some kind of confectionery extravaganza. Every slim tower looked designed to hold a captive princess. Magrat shivered, but then she thought of the wand. A godmother had responsibilities.
"Reminds me of another one of them Black Alice stories," said Granny Weatherwax. "I remember when she locked up that girl with the long pigtails in a tower just like one of them. Rumpelstiltskin or someone."
"But she got out," said Magrat. "Yes, it does you good to let your hair down," said Nanny.
"Eh, rural miss," said Granny.
They drew nearer to the city walls. Then Magrat said,
"There's guards on the gate. Are we going to fly over?"
Granny stared at the highest tower through narrowed eyes.
"No," she said, "we'll land and walk in, so as not to worry people."
"There's a nice flat green bit just behind those trees," said Magrat.
Granny walked up and down experimentally. Her boots squeaked and gurgled in watery accusation.
"Look, I said I'm sorry," said Magrat. "It just looked so flat."
"Water generally does," said Nanny, sitting on a tree stump and wringing out her dress.
"But even you couldn't tell it was water," said Magrat. "It looks so grassy with all that weed and stuff floating on it."
"Seems to me the land and the water round here can't decide who is which," said Nanny.
She looked around at the miasmic landscape. Trees grew out of the swamp. They had a jagged foreign look and seemed to be rotting as they grew. Where the water was visible, it was black like ink. Occasionally a few bubbles would eructate to the surface like the ghosts of beans on bath night. And somewhere over in the distance was the river, if it was possible to be that sure in this land of thick water and ground that wobbled when you set foot on it. She blinked.
"That's odd," she said.
"What?" said Granny.
"Thought I saw something running," muttered Nanny. "Over there, between the trees."
"Must be a duck, then, in this place."
"It was bigger than a duck," said Nanny. "Funny thing is, it looked a bit like a little house."
"Oh, yes, running along with smoke coming out the chimney, I expect," said Granny witheringly.
Nanny brightened.
"You saw it too?"
Granny rolled her eyes.
"Come on," she said, "let's get to the road."
Said Magrat. "How?"
They looked at the nominal ground between their reasonably dry refuge and the road. It had a yellowish appearance. There were floating branches and tufts of suspiciously green grass. Nanny pulled a branch off the fallen tree she was sitting on and tossed it a few yards. It struck damply and sank with the noise of someone trying to get the last bit out of a milkshake.
"We fly over to it, of course," Nanny said.
"You two can," said Granny. "There's nowhere for me to run and get mine started."
In the end, Magrat ferried her across on her broom, Nanny bringing up the rear with Granny's erratic stick in tow.
"I just hope no one saw us, that's all," said Granny, when they'd reached the comparative safety of the road.
Other roads joined the swamp causeway as they got nearer to the city. They were crowded, and there was a long line at the gate. From ground level, the city was even more impressive. Against the steam of the swamps, it shone like a polished stone. Coloured flags flew over the walls.
"Looks very jolly," said Nanny.
"Very clean," said Magrat.
"It just looks like that from the outside," said Granny, who had seen a city before. "When you get inside, it'll be all beggars and noise and gutters full of I don't know what. You mark my words."
"They're turning quite a lot of people away," said Nanny.
"They said on the boat that lots of people come here for fat lunchtime," said Granny. "Probably you get lots of people who ain't the right sort."
Half a dozen guards watched them approach.
"Very smartly turned out," said Granny. "That's what I like to see. Not like at home."
There are only 6 suits of chain mail in the whole of Lancre, made on the basis of one size doesn't quite fit all. Bits of string and wire had to be employed to take in the slack, since in Lancre the role of palace guard was generally taken by any citizen who hadn't got much to do at the moment. These guards were all 6-footers, and even Granny had to admit quite impressive in their jolly red and blue uniforms. The only other real city guards she'd ever seen were those in Ankh-Morpork. The sight of Ankh-Morpork's city guard made thoughtful people wonder who could possibly attack that was worse. They certainly weren't anything to look at. To her amazement, 2 pikes barred her way as she stepped under the arched gateway.
"We're not attacking, you know," she said.
A corporal gave her a salute.
"No, ma'am," he said, "but we have orders to stop borderline cases."
"Borderline?" said Nanny. "What's borderline about us?" The corporal swallowed. Granny Weatherwax's gaze was a hard one to meet.
"Well," he said, "you're a bit grubby."
There was a ringing silence. Granny took a deep breath.
"We had a bit of an accident in the swamp," said Magrat quickly.
"I'm sure it'll be all right," said the corporal wretchedly. "The captain'll be here directly. Only there's all kinds of trouble if we let in the wrong sort.
You'd be amazed at some of the people we get in here."
"Can't go letting the wrong sort in," said Nanny Og. "We wouldn't want you to go letting the wrong sort in. I dare say we wouldn't want to come into the kind of city that had let the wrong sort in, would we, Esme?"
Magrat kicked her on the ankle.
"Good thing we're the right sort,"